mornings, I'm Chris Oakes, and coming up today, a growing majority of small business owners are less than 10 years from the time when they say they'll be ready to hand over the reins, but one-third of those have no plan for when that time comes. Also this morning, amid big changes to the local recycling program, the Hancock County Solid Waste Management District is holding the first of their summer household hazardous waste collection events this week. We'll get details. And it's hot fun in the summertime. We'll get details on July programs from the Hancock Park District. Michelle Rumschlag will tell us what's happening. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Tuesday, June 25th, 2024. Crazy story that this past Sunday, the TSA broke the record for the most people screened on a single day at the nation's airports. Nearly 3 million individuals, 2.99 million people were screened at airport checkpoints. Easy for me to say, airport checkpoints this past Sunday. So the first Sunday of the summer season, technically, is the first Sunday after the summer solstice. But that was even more than Memorial Day weekend. And they say it could be a short-lived record because the upcoming 4th of July week could be one of the busiest ever. The TSA expects to screen more than 32 million individuals from this coming Thursday through Monday, July 8th, the 4th of July travel period. The peak travel day, they say, will be this coming Friday. This coming Friday, more than 3 million individuals are likely to be screened. So that would set a new record, eclipsing the one set this past Sunday. So I just thought that was kind of crazy that it should be a record-setting day at the airports on just some random Sunday during the summer. I know the summer season is the busiest travel time of the year, but to set a record on just, you know, a random, not Memorial Day weekend, not 4th of July, not Labor Day or even Thanksgiving or Christmas, just to set them as a random Sunday at the end of June. In any event, I thought this was kind of interesting in the statement or the press release that they issued announcing this new record from this past Sunday. They say TSA is staffed to meet its wait time standards, 10 minutes or less in pre-check lanes and 30 minutes or less in standard screening lanes. That's the goal, to get you through airport security. But again, this coming Friday is going to be the busiest day ever, if the projections are correct, and the 4th of July week plus of travel, 32 million individuals. So if you're heading to the airport, pack your patience, we always say. Let's see. By the way, speaking of travel, this is kind of interesting. A new survey of 2,000 Americans finds 61% of adults plan to head for a what they call a dupe destination in order to save some money. This is a term that they have given to destinations that are similar in experience and charm to a major destination, but at a lower price point. For example, instead of going to the Bahamas, you can go to the Virgin Islands. It's very similar. The two are very similar, similar experience, but the Virgin Islands is cheaper. You could go to Belfast, Ireland, instead of London. Similar experience, but cheaper. Or, closer to home, Memphis, going to Memphis instead of going to Nashville. Very similar experiences. Memphis is cheaper. 51% in the survey would pick a dupe destination to avoid the large crowds. So it's not just saving money, it's avoiding all of the people. 41% would be interested in how a dupe destination compares to a more popular one. So maybe they're just going out of curiosity. It can be easy to think about summer travel and immediately start planning a trip abroad or to an exotic destination, but it's good to remember that there are equally wonderful places to travel that are less expensive, closer to home, less crowded. This is according to Alan Babikov of the website economybookings.com, which specializes in these dupe destinations. So you want to avoid the crowds, maybe save a little money, something to consider this summer vacation season. So did you hear that the guy who got struck by the roller coaster at Kings Island has passed away? They identified him the other day, 38-year-old Antonaro Nelson. This guy allegedly entered a restricted and fenced-in area near the Banshee roller coaster in at Kings Island, north of Cincinnati, because he had dropped his keys. He had lost his keys while on the ride, and he wanted to retrieve them. The park security person or the park employee said, no, you can't go in there. And according to the story that I saw, that I heard about, he tried to, like, hop a fence. An employee caught him and said, don't do that. It's dangerous. You can't do that. Wait until the park is closed. We can retrieve them then. Well, he wasn't satisfied with that. And so, from what I understand, he got back in line and then snuck around one of the fenced areas while he was in line, which is how he avoided being spotted. And then he was reportedly struck by the coaster, taken to the hospital in critical condition, reportedly died on Friday from those injuries. So they put those things up, those big signs and those fences, for a reason. They say, keep out. And you would be wise. I mean, it's tragic that this guy died trying to retrieve his car keys, of all things. But it's, at the same time, it's hard to feel sorry for him. I mean, you know, they fence these things in. He was warned. There are big signs that say, keep out, danger. What do you think is going to happen? So, just a reminder. And it serves as a reminder not to take loose items with you on the roller coasters. There's a reason why they have those lockers to store your stuff. I know it costs an extra $2, but in hindsight, probably would have been better to rent the locker than... this is the other big story people are buzzing about. Filming for a new movie taking place in Toledo. They've been filming in other areas of Ohio, Cleveland, Sandusky, Rossford even. Been filming for this movie on Hulu. It is called Eeny Meeny, and apparently stars Andy Garcia, Steve Zahn. They were spotted overnight, night before last, in the Westmoreland neighborhood of Toledo, filming for the movie. So, is anybody spotted? They're filming all over Northwest Ohio. I haven't spotted them here, but if anyone sees Andy Garcia walking around town, maybe he's listening this morning. Hey, Andy. Good to have you here. Welcome to Northwest Ohio. Kind of crazy. Let's see. This is a crazy story. Everybody has been buzzing about this story, and maybe you heard about it. The story of Anna Lee Dozier and the vase that she bought, the vase that she bought 5 years ago at a Maryland thrift store. She paid $3.99 for it at the thrift store. Thought it was a really cool looking reproduction of a Mexican vase. She said it looked kind of old, but she was thinking maybe 30 years old or something like that. Kind of a tourist trinket. But she said it looked cool, so she bought it for $3.99, and she's had it in her house ever since. However, during a recent trip to Mexico, she noticed that the Mayan artifacts that she saw in a museum looked suspiciously like the vase that she had at home. It was almost like they were part of a matched set. And so after she got back home, she snapped some photos of her vase and sent them to Mexican authorities in antiquities, who later confirmed that her find, what she had in her home, was actually a priceless Mayan artifact, a ceremonial urn from the Mayan age, dating all the way back to like the year 700 AD, something like that. She wanted to, give it back to the people that it belonged to and put it in a museum where it belonged. But she said after finding out just how valuable her item was, then she said she was petrified that after, you know, 2,000 years, that she would be the one to break it. It survived all this time. She said, I got a couple of young boys at home. I was suddenly petrified that I might break it. So she very delicately returned it to, I guess, what, the embassy in this country. They will send it to the museum in Mexico where it will be displayed. She recognized that a whole country, a whole culture cares about this item, and we are deeply in gratitude to her, according to the Mexican ambassador. So that's... But yeah, wouldn't you be worried that you would, after all this time, you would be the one to break it? Man, that would... I'm glad that didn't happen. That would be a real tragedy. But the part of the story that just fascinates me, and we'll never really know, I'm sure there's no way of ever knowing, how did this priceless Mayan artifact from 2,000 years ago, or nearly 2,000 years ago, end up at a Maryland thrift store? That must be just an incredible story. How did it end up in a thrift store in Maryland? What a journey that Mayan urn must have, what a story it would be able to tell if it could only talk. It's crazy. And finally here, the last item among the first things you need to know this morning, most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. If you are looking for an investment property, I got one for you. A three-bedroom home in San Francisco is on the market. Now, I know what you're thinking. San Francisco real estate prices are insane. Yes, they are. But this three-bedroom home is on the market for just under $500,000. A veritable bargain for the San Francisco Bay Area. Here's the kicker, though. You can't move in until the year 2053. This is a listing on Zillow, says that a tenant is living in the home and the new buyer must honor the rental agreement. And the rental agreement is for $417 a month, which is insanely cheap. Again, well, really anywhere, but especially in San Francisco, $417 a month for up to 30 years. Up to 30 years. So you can buy it now for $500,000, but you can't do anything with it until 2053. So if you are very patient, obviously you could one day own a home or flip the home for perhaps millions of dollars. It is for a very unique buyer that is willing to get a big discount, but who has a very patient wait, according to attorney Stephen McDonald. You just have to have an awful lot of patience, but it's a bargain. So I don't know. I saw this story, day before yesterday on the Newswire, so I have no idea if it's still available, but somebody is going to get I don't know if I could wait 30 years, but if I was, you know, 20 years younger than I am now, that wouldn't be a bad deal, right? I mean, that could literally finance your retirement. You could wait 30 years and then flip it. Anyway, just something to think about there. Bargains are everywhere if you know where to look. There you go. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Tuesday morning started.
I'm Jay Fox on the Ohio News Network. In Cincinnati, UC Health has opened a new blood cancer center. The $131 million facility features 30 inpatient beds, research labs running over 40 clinical trials, and outpatient clinics. The first patient will be seen July 10th. The hope is that this will help the hospital obtain an NCI cancer designation. The Cincinnati Inquirer reports that the designation would unlock millions of federal dollars and attract attract higher quality employees. Cincinnati hasn't had a facility with that designation in over 25 years. A man was arrested in East Canton over the weekend for allegedly firing shots at a police officer. Lena Lai of ONN affiliate WKYC-TV in Cleveland has the story.
An East Canton officer was making a traffic stop when he heard nearby gunfire. The officer saw a motorcycle speeding off and then followed it. The motorcyclist fired two shots at the officer. He missed, then lost control and crashed his motorcycle, then ran off. K-9 officers found Edward Irwin III of Canton. He's in the Stark County Jail.
The Associated Press and ESPN are both reporting that the Cleveland Cavaliers are finalizing contract details with Kenny Atkinson to be their new head coach. Atkinson was an assistant with Golden State and was previously the head coach of the Brooklyn Nets, where he coached both Cavs center Jared Allen and guard Caris LeVert. For the Ohio News Network, I'm Jay Fox.
Well, a growing majority of small business owners are now over the age of 55, approaching the time when they will be ready to hand over the reins. But a new survey finds one in three do not consider succession planning to be a top priority. Edward Jones Wealth Management Advice Principal Catherine Roy is with us this morning. Catherine, probably not a real big surprise, actually. Most business owners are likely too busy running their business to give much thought to the time when they won't be running it anymore. But you're talking about a real boom in business successions that's coming here.
Yes, Chris, the boom is real. Of the 33 million business owners in the United States, more than half of them are over the age of 55. So we know over the next decade, 10 to 15 years, those businesses will need to change hands. And business owners today are grappling with the near term more than thinking about the future. So to give you a sense, on the optimistic side of the business owners that we surveyed, 88% want to see growth in their business over the next decade. They're very optimistic about the future of their business, and they want their successor to continue to grow the business. Yet they're dealing with near-term concerns like healthcare costs for them and their employees, also technological changes that is impacting their business. So those are real drivers as to why so many business owners don't have a succession plan in place that is fully prepared. So
yeah,
about 58% indicated they're not fully prepared for a business transition.
Yeah, and like I said, I guess it's to be expected, especially in times like these, that there are so many other issues that become front and center that it kind of naturally gets pushed back down the list of priorities. And by the way, when we say handing over the reins of the business succession, that could be passing it to the next generation of the family. It could be selling the business to a third party. I guess it could even include closing down a business. Each of those outcomes does need a plan, you say?
That's correct. We see about half of the business owners we surveyed were planning to transition the business to a family member. And that can seem like a very straightforward process. But when we ask the potential successors about succeeding the business owner, they're not always on the same page. So they often said, look, I saw my parents or I saw the current business owner put their blood, sweat, and tears into a business over many years. That's not necessarily what they're interested in doing, or they have different career aspirations. So we know that business owners need to have that discussion sooner than later, have that plan in place, and also potentially consider other options like selling to their employees, selling to a business partner. And at the end of the day, a third-party sale is always an option. But really understanding the value of the business and the potential buyers out there are going to be an important consideration for that option.
Really interesting stuff there. What were some of the other findings from the survey of business owners, maybe the ones that really jumped out at you as surprising?
The surprise for me is that the typical business owner is thinking about transferring their business on average at the age of 63, and about a quarter of them are waiting until just 2 years before that age to begin the discussions with their successor. So they're not really giving enough time for that successor to get up to speed, to really think about how to navigate the business through different market cycles or different cycles overall. And they're not giving themselves enough time to think about what's next for them. We know for many business owners, their business has been their life for, potentially decades, and it takes time to think about what's next. How are they going to have purpose in their next act? How are they going to have social connection, remain active in their communities once that business has moved to someone else? That can be quite a daunting task.
Yeah.
Our advisors work every day with people that are making that transition, and they really need a coach in some of those aspects, which is where we can play a key role.
That is really interesting, too. I mean, we talk about succession plans for the business, but personal succession plans, I guess we could call it, are also very important. So with all of that said, laying out all of this, and again, to underscore what you were saying, you know, age 63 is when a lot of these business owners would like to make that transition. And if a majority of them are already at 55, you can do the math and say that this is coming up quick. So what are the key factors for business owners to consider when laying out that succession plan? Where do we start?
I think the most important factor is to get started. So we know that businesses transition a majority of the time in unexpected ways or due to unexpected events. Life happens. And so they shouldn't wait until their anticipated date of transitioning. They really need to put this plan in place today. So we know the life events that cause businesses to transfer hands unexpectedly are the five D's. So death, disability, divorce, disagreement with a business partner, or distress in the business. So it's really important wherever that business is in its life cycle, or that individual is in terms of business owner, that plan be in place. I think the second most important factor is involving their financial advisor. So we know that 2/3 of business owners are working with a financial advisor, either personally with their personal wealth or for the business, but yet only 1/3 are talking about their succession and transition planning of the business with their advisor. And we think that's a myth, because our advisors work with 750,000 business owners every day, and they play 3 key roles in that business succession planning process. The first is assembling and being the quarterback of a team that can help that business transfer with legal, tax, valuation, and banking services. Really to make sure that it's being transferred in the best way possible for that business owner and their aspirations for their business. Second, we've already talked about it, it's as a coach to that business owner for what's next, what their next act is going to look like. And then lastly, for many, particularly small business owners, the proceeds from the sale of the business play a really critical role in their own retirement planning process, but also their goals related to legacy planning. What would they like to give to the next generation themselves, not necessarily in the form of a business, or what do they want to give back to their community, given many small business owners are the lifeblood of our communities.
Yeah.
So being that personal CFO, we think, is a key role for our advisors to be playing.
Now, you mentioned the fact that many times business succession happens not necessarily on the time frame that a business owner necessarily plans for, because there are all kinds of things that can come up that can force a succession plan or a business succession,
right,
not necessarily expectedly. I would imagine that each of those presents some unique hurdles, but generally speaking, what are the biggest hurdles that business owners face when they are succession planning?
I think it's identifying the right successor, the successor that is going to carry that business forward in a way that aligns with that business owner's view. Mm-hmm. I think second, it's having a discussion with that successor and making sure that successor is on board and is getting familiar with what that role and responsibility is going to look like, and really shadowing that business owner through time so that they can understand how to navigate both the ups and downs that we all know that businesses face. So I think it's having that plan in place, but also then having the conversations and involving the right advisors in that process really will be critical for that business owner's transfer to be a success.
A lot of important stuff there for business owners to start thinking about. Again, Catherine Roy is Principal Wealth Management Advice for Edward Jones. I mentioned the survey. You've got more information about it and more advice for getting that conversation started at your website.
Yes, you can go to edwardjones.com/nextinline or talk to any of our local Edward Jones financial advisors.
Catherine, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.
So amid big changes to the local recycling program that we talked about not too long ago, the Hancock County Solid Waste Management District holding the first of their summer household hazardous waste collection events this week. Today, in fact, Courtney Comstock is with us once again. Now, Courtney, the last time we had you here a couple of weeks ago, we were kind of in the middle of the transition of folks who remember we were talking about collecting all of the old recycling bins, replacing those with the newer ones, which were smaller and maybe more convenient for recyclers.
Yes.
Has that process been completed now? Have those all been swapped out, or where does that stand?
Yes, for the most part, everything is okay. Where it needs to be. The units are in progress. We're still trying to deal with a couple of glitches here and there. We are looking for additional locations and sites. So if you have a public property or private property mm-hmm. that you are able to put 3-4 dumpsters to give better public access, we'd love to get you on our list and increase that availability to the community.
So that was going to be my next question. Again, when we were talking the last time you were here, there was some discussion over would all of the locations be the same? Would some of the temporary locations become permanent locations? Where does that stand? Or, you know, will people find the dumpsters, the bins, where they normally are used to seeing them?
Actually, I'm going to go with yes, for the most part. Okay. Absolutely. Okay. We did have to remove, like, there was a weekend or one at a church on the north end of town. However, they've reached out and they'd like to find room on their parking lot to make it a permanent location. Okay. So we're working on that, trying to make that a little bit more accessible. Again, we're still looking for a few more locations to make it a little bit more convenient for users. Mm-hmm.
So, especially given the fact that, again, like we were talking about before, there won't be those weekend locations that have popped up in the community before.
Right. Those temporary locations. So yeah. To have more of a full-time access is absolutely what we're looking for.
Yeah.
The third-party contractor, it makes it a lot easier to service those.
Mm-hmm.
So far, the locations that we've had have had great service. The schedule seems to be working. We've got a few glitches here and there, but you're going to have that with any program. You know, we did the blue bins for over 20 years, and
right.
we had a few glitches from time to time.
Well, and that's one of the reasons why we want to kind of get an update and let people know where things stand is because, you know, change is difficult for anyone. And, you know, the blue bin recycling program has been in place for at least a couple of decades.
Yeah, a couple of them.
Yeah. So, you know, this transition is something that everybody is going to have to kind of adjust to. As we mentioned the last time, one of the things that, you know, with this transition, it meant some changes to some of those special collection events. I know you had the first of the tire recycling events post transition.
Yep.
This past weekend.
Yep.
Everything
seemed to go pretty well. We collected a little over 800 tires at that event. So that's keeping those out of the ditches and roadways, which is awesome.
Absolutely.
For our community.
Yep.
So yes, absolutely. We're getting positive response. People are participating.
And the household hazardous waste collection is today.
Yes.
So give us the details on this.
We have updated that system to provide a monthly collection service. Okay. So for tonight, we are going to be at the Hancock County Fairgrounds. So that's on East Sandusky Street. You're going to come in the exit. You're going to go straight down, and we're going to have trucks and crew and everybody there to collect your paints and chemicals right out of your vehicle.
So when you say you're going to enter from what is normally the exit, that's off of Sandusky?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, it's the secondary, not the main entrance. It's the exit. You're coming in straight out. I will have a banner up there that says recycling event.
Follow the crowd.
Yeah. The first part of the event is normally when the lines totally happen. So from 1 p.m. till 6 p.m. we'll provide this event. And again, it's free of charge to just bring in your paints, oils.
Yeah. So it is a different location.
Yes.
So that is, you know, the first thing we need to, again, it is at the fairgrounds. So
yep.
It is a new location, but what you are collecting is pretty much the same as always.
Yes.
Right?
We're still collecting the household hazardous items. So, mm-hmm. you know, your varnishes, stains, the cleaners that you found in the back of your sink cabinet that you're like, I wonder how long ago I bought that. Right. You know, not a problem. Bring it in. Batteries, mercury thermometers, we've been getting a lot of those, propane cylinders, those types of things. Mm-hmm. We are happy to accept. You're not really sure what to do with them. Today is the day.
Pesticides,
that kind of herbicides, thing in the, fertilizers.
The back of the storage shed.
Yep, the back of the shed, the garage, yeah. The barn covered in dust. Bring it.
Now, a couple of things to make mention of, and by now I would hope that most people know this, but... not going to want to mix those things into one big container and bring them in the containers that they are in.
Absolutely. Yeah. The on-site crew is trained and specialized in handling those materials. Mm-hmm. We pay them to take care of that for us.
They need to know what they are.
Yes. Yes. And we need to be cautious about what we're mixing together, fumes, explosives, yeah, those types of things. Dangerous. We do not want any explosives. So if you come across any old ammunition, there are other routes to take. As opposed to a household hazardous waste event. So this is, again, a monthly collection instead of a weekly. Used to be weekly for the last 10 to 15 years. Now we are at a monthly event. We tried to make it a little later in the day so that maybe those people that had to work previously can now make it to the event by hosting it a little later in the evening.
Okay, so that is from when to when today?
Today is from 1 p.m. to 6 p.m.
1 to 6. And this is no charge for residents of Hancock County.
That is correct. We just check an ID when you're in line. Kind of make sure you are from Hancock County. All the surrounding districts offer this type of program, and it is pretty expensive for the county to host.
Yeah.
So that's why we kind of want to specifically limit the access to Hancock County residents only.
And you mentioned it is a monthly event. What is the, is there a set day as like, this is what the last Tuesday of the month is that
we are trying to maintain that type of a system. Okay. However, this is the first year we've been doing that. We are going to have that pretty much. The next event will be July 30th, and then August 20th is not the last Tuesday because the last Tuesday is the Hancock County Fair.
Obviously, can't have it at the fairgrounds.
We want to have it the week before that, and then September will be the last event. You can get the dates on our website at thehancockenvironment.com.
Also noticed, and we have that linked up at our webpage too, when I was looking at some of those details from the website, appliance and electronics recycling is a no-go.
Not for this collection event. We are looking at hosting on those on a separate activity.
Okay.
With the closure of Litter Landing, electronics are no longer accepted.
Okay.
So we are looking at hosting those, but I wouldn't foresee that happening until possibly 2025.
Okay.
Some of the dust settles, got to reach out to new contractors, those types of things.
So again, one of those things that maybe previously we would be talking about not going to be happening at least this year.
Correct. We are still going to host the paper shred event, though. So that will be in August. So get your documents shredded. You know, we can always come back and talk about that or get the details online. But not all the events have gone away. The activities are still there. It's just a few little kinks in the fire we got to work out.
Just some changes. Just some changes.
Minor tweaks.
It's like we said, it's hard for anyone, especially when you're used to something for so many years, to throw a wrench and change things up. But, you know, it is what it is. So,
yes, sir.
And again, as we mentioned, the transition for the most part is complete to the new bins. So if you see those out there, have at it.
Yep, there will be a few more changes at Litter Landing as they are going to add a few more bins at the Litter Landing site.
Okay.
But otherwise, throughout the community, again, you're going to see those recycling units. Utilize them, single stream, enjoy the easier access program.
Yeah.
And, you know, please continue to support the local recycling.
One of the big benefits that single stream. Again, Hancock County Solid Waste Management District summer household hazardous waste collection events begin today at the fairgrounds, 1 to 6. Courtney Comstock with us once again this morning. Courtney, thanks very much.
Thank you.
You're listening to Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
A motorist in France who was caught speeding reportedly painted his car from green to gray in order to avoid a ticket. This is actually kind of clever. I mean, this is going all out to avoid a ticket. I mean, I understand nobody wants a speeding ticket, but just how far would you go to avoid a simple speeding ticket? On June 2nd, officials used a speed radar gun to clock the driver of a bright green Porsche going too fast. I don't know how fast he was going. I don't know what the speed limit was. Couldn't tell you. But the story goes on to say that the motorist did not stop when cops tried to pull him over. After some investigation, a potential suspect was asked to come into the police station. But when the driver arrived, he had a gray Porsche, not a green one. So he said, "See, it wasn't me. My Porsche is gray. It's not green." However, after some investigating, police found evidence of green paint on the car, and the driver confessed to repainting his car to try to avoid the ticket for speeding. Now, that's going all out to avoid a speeding ticket. The car has been impounded until the case is resolved. Would you paint your Porsche just to avoid a speeding ticket? That's pretty extreme, I think. That is extreme. Elsewhere in the broken news, speaking of cars, a car was used to try to break into a gun store in San Diego County, California the other day. Apparently, this has happened in other places around Southern California as well. Police say this latest attempt was not successful. apparently they have the people who tried to crash their car into the store. They have them in custody because the suspects left behind the car after trying to ram the front of the gun store in Miramar. It disabled the car, so they had to leave it behind, and cops used that to track them down. Local news reports say the car hit the store just after 5 a.m., not able to make it through the armored gate. This failed attempt follows successful robberies at gun stores in Oceanside and Poway, where cars were also used to break into the locations over the last few months. So. just tried to push their luck one too many times, apparently. Disabled the car, they had to leave it behind. Okay. Now, this is a bit unusual. I mean, you've got carjackings, people will hijack airplanes from time to time, but you hear those stories in the news. But a train jacking is a little unusual. Police say a 26-year-old passenger tried to hijack a transit train in Salt Lake City. He is now in custody. Utah Transit Authority police say Isaiah Spendlove was on board a Trax train. That's the name for the public transit system there in Salt Lake, TRAX, Trax. So anyway, it's a clever name for the train. So he was on board the train on Saturday when he began beating on the door of the driver's cabin and yelling at the engineer. Now, you would think, I mean, if you take a car, you can drive it anywhere. If you hijack a plane, you can fly it anywhere. You're pretty limited if you try to hijack a train as to where you can take it. It's not like you can take control of the train and say, "Take me to Mexico" or something. You can only go where the tracks are. But here's the reason why he wanted to hijack the train. Apparently, he wanted to force the engineer to drive the train backward to the stop that he had just missed. He had this brilliant plan since he missed his stop. Not to get off at the next stop and maybe catch the next train back to where he originally wanted to go. No, his brilliant idea was to hijack the train, make it drive in reverse back to the stop that he missed. The engineer and another passenger held the suspect until police arrived and placed Mr. Spendlove in custody. The engineer, another passenger, placed him in a taco wrap device for restraint and transport. He has been booked into the Salt Lake County Jail. He's actually charged with a felony intent to hijack a vehicle. All because he missed his stop. I don't think he's going to get back to his original stop anytime soon. That's the... Yeah. Now, this is kind of weird. You know, Taylor Swift has been all in the news for her Eras tour. She's in Europe now. And apparently there is this phenomenon that has come from the Eras tour for many Taylor Swift fans. Some fans are experiencing a blank space the day after seeing her concert. See what I did there? Blank space. Taylor Swift songs. It's basically short-term amnesia. One Swiftie posted on a recent video that she cannot remember the concert at all. She was just there. She said, "I was there. I know I had the time of my life. So why can't I remember it?" Experts say, they've looked into this, experts say the rush could impact your memory, the rush of excitement. The emotion of the situation, this is Dr. Puneet Shah, says the emotion of the situation can mean people are so immersed and emotional that the details of the event aren't as well formed in their minds as they might expect. Interestingly, intense emotions can create more vivid memories as well, which can be known as flashbulb memories. But in this case, they're having amnesia because they were so excited about the... Man, I tell you what, if I spent the kind of money that it takes to go to the Eras tour, I mean, you've seen the cost of tickets? I would definitely want to remember it. You know what I mean? That would really stink. And finally, speaking of losing one's memory. This is in the UK, and I'm not sure exactly where in the UK this is. 19-year-old waitress Eloise Pauly was partying at a local club with some friends when she decided to use the ladies' room. And that was the last her friends saw of her. It's also the last thing she remembered before waking up in the bathroom of the club the next morning. Adding insult to injury, security video shows the 19-year-old waitress trying to slink out of the establishment with as little embarrassment as possible, only to set off the alarm system in the building in the process. you try to be low-key, and you try to slink out undetected, and suddenly the alarm goes off. Well, so much for being inconspicuous. She writes on social media, "It was the most embarrassing thing ever." She did apologize to the club owners, who took the incident in stride. She said they apologized to her and said kind of cheekily, hope you had a good night's sleep. The club also advised other young partiers to drink responsibly in an effort to avoid a similar mishap. The owners also vowed to step up safety precautions at the club, putting in procedures to ensure that this doesn't happen again. When I saw this story, the very first thing that I thought they might want to do is maybe clean the bathroom. You know what I mean? She ended up spending the night in the bathroom because nobody noticed. That means nobody went in to clean the bathroom. Think about that for a second. I'm just saying. There you go. That is today's Broken News Report. An update of the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Most of us like to be out in the sun. That's why sunscreen and other safety measures are key to protecting your skin from aging and cancer. The FDA recommends using a sunscreen with an SPF of 15 or higher. Also, look for broad spectrum on the label. That means both harmful ultraviolet A and B rays are blocked. Remember, SPF plus broad spectrum equal healthy fun in the sun. Visit www.fda.gov/sunscreen for more information.
This message provided by WFIN.
Time now for your daily download. The numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. And this is a very interesting survey of 1,500 adults. This was a survey by Nap Lab. Okay. Nap Lab, they monitor sleeping habits. They track sleeping habits, Americans and so on. This is what they specialize in, better sleep and so on. Nap Lab. Anyway, they surveyed a little over 1,500 adults. And what they found was that of all of the states in America, what state would you figure do couples have the most intimate relations? Most often, they have the most... Okay, we're talking about sex here. I mean, there's no way of dancing around this. We're all adults in the room. We're talking about the state where couples, you know, have the most is Alaska, which is probably not a big surprise if you think about it. What else is there to do in Alaska? Alaskans have the most sex of any state in the United States. Alaskans do the deed almost three times a week. Now, the national, three times a week. The national average is just over once a week. So nearly three times the frequency as the rest of the country as a whole. On the other end of the spectrum, Colorado has the lowest rate of copulation, with the average adult getting busy with it less than once every 2 weeks. Wow. That's quite the disparity there. By the way, after Alaska, the rest of the top five friskiest states are New Mexico, Vermont, Arkansas, and Indiana. On the other end, challenging Colorado at the bottom of the list are Maine, Michigan, Nebraska, and West Virginia have the least sex in the country. Now, in case you are wondering, because I know you are wondering, Ohio ranks 32nd overall at 0.9 interludes per week on average. Just under once a week, just under the national average. I think the national average specifically is like 1.2 times per week when they do the math. So Ohio, just a hair under that national average. And by the way, some other interesting factoids from the survey here. 7.8% of all respondents claim that they are intimate with their partner every single day. Every single day. Whew! 7.8%. 9.5% say it is a once-a-year event. Once-a-year treat. 9.5%. There are more people who do it once a year than there are who do it every single day, which is kind of interesting. And 5.6% in the survey say that they are abstinent. Time for a little hot fun in the summertime. We'll get details on programs in the month of July from the Hancock Park District. Michelle Rumschlag is here. Hard to believe we're talking about July already. Today, we are halfway to Christmas.
Oh, just 6 months.
25th of June.
I didn't realize that. I mean, I knew because it was just
right. It's 25th the 25th
or what the date was today, right? Mm-hmm. And I will say that kind of weird stuff to my kids. You know, it's only this Christmas, and then halfway, they're like,
halfway
right?
through.
Oh, there's people that are counting that stuff down. I see that. Only so many Fridays till Christmas, and they're planting their trees are up after 4th of July.
Here's the thing, though. You know how quickly it seems to have gone since last Christmas, all of a sudden, bang, we're here.
I know.
It's going to be that amount of time before next year. I'm just saying.
Like I said, I'm the reminder of time gone by. It's like June's been kind of just,
a blur. As we were mentioning, we're getting ready for July, which seems hard to believe. We've already had weather as hot as a firecracker last week. As a matter of fact, it was so warm that Zonta Landing closed, didn't it?
Yes, with the heat advisory. Yes. Yeah. So it just depends on the program. Mm-hmm. So if it's like something outside, all the, you know, that you can't go inside.
There were a couple of other things that.
Yes. Yeah. And then with the heat, it's just moving boats and in that boathouse, it gets warm. And so it's just one of those things that, right. So this like this weekend looks good.
Mm-hmm.
Nice and cool. And then also want to bring up, too, since Zonta Landing, we are open 4th of July.
Right.
Because that's one of the holidays during the week. And so just regular hours, 1 to 7, less rental at 6:30. Again, $5, half hour.
All right.
All the boats available. So everything just like.
If you're looking for something to do on the 4th of July.
On the 4th of July, yes, we will be there.
All right. Yep. Let's see here. Also, speaking of things that are open that haven't been. The McInnes House in Litzenberg is open.
Yeah, so hopefully everybody's had a chance to go out. I've been out there. Oh my gosh, I think just once since the reopening and kind of walked around real quick and saw all the new pavement stuff.
Well, that's what I was going to say. Great. For the benefit of those who weren't aware, maybe saw that Litzenberg was closed, but what was going on out there?
So we did a repaving project. And so they came in and tore out the old driveway, the parking lot. I think this was the original that they put in back in the late 90s. All the walkways were tore out. And so that's all been redone. Mm-hmm. We have a overflow parking lot, which we always had, but it was grass. So it was hit and miss with the weather if we could use it or not, because if it was wet, we couldn't. So that's in there now. There's some paving behind the activity barn. So that kind of expands that area. There's new fire rings going in, new benches and stuff. It looks, you know, there's some retention ponds. I think that'd be really dry right now.
Right.
But it's just some of that. I mean, it looks really cool. Like I said, I popped out the beginning of the month and did a quick walkthrough. And
so good news.
It looks good. So, yeah. So now that we're finally reopened, yes, we are back at the McInnes House on Sunday, July 7th. And the topic is Life of a Horner. So this would be
a Horner.
Horner. So
Horner,
using
not a hoarder.
Not a hoarder. I'm.
I don't know if they had those.
Pioneer hoarder. Well, they used everything, so I don't know if it was considered hoarding then because they just would have used everything.
Yeah.
A Horner. So using animal horn, and so they would have horns, antlers, bones. How they would have, you know, made goods from it. So they would have contained. You know, they could make little cups out of it. So remember, they don't have. Plastic. They don't have some of these containers like we do today.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you've
got
no
Tupperware. There were no
Tupperware parties. This would be Tim Clayman, who's a program specialist, actually did a smaller program on it, and he called it Horn, the Plastic of 1847, which I loved that title. So they, of course, you know, you've got your cattle, deer, all those animals, and they would have used again everything that they could have off of them.
Yeah.
And so it'll be learning about that. And how they would have processed and stuff. So again, 1 to 4, Sunday afternoon. Hopefully, again, if you've missed the McInnes House, we've missed you and being out there.
Yeah.
So come on out. And a little addition to the house. We have a new ramp to get to the house. So the walkway is still there to go up, but you know, you enter through the back part of the house. But we have an ADA accessible ramp. So
putting
that in, we had to do some changes to the garden. I guess actually the garden isn't there right now. We kind of tore all the boards out so they could do the construction. And so next
year. That'll
be back. So we're going to get everything kind of figured out, the new layout, and then next year do a replanting of the herbs and plants and stuff. So
I'm sure that will be a big to-do about the planting of the new garden.
It will. We have to figure out all the beds and stuff yet. That's something that I'm going to be working on here. And then we'll get the beds in hopefully sometime this year or later this year.
Okay.
And then come next year, start getting all the different herbs and stuff. Very excited about that. Come check us out. And then, again, programming will be now until the end of the year. And, again, all of that. Well, summer stuff's on the calendar. Again, HancockParks.com for programs. But July and August are on the website.
What else is going on? We mentioned activities at Litzenberg.
Yes.
What else is going on?
Well, to head over to Oakwoods, we have our Wee Ones program on Monday, July 15th. And, of course, Wee Ones is for those ages 3 and under with an adult. And we're going to be doing bubbles as our theme, which for years we always did mud in July and bubbles in August. So I'm bringing back our bubbles here in July. And just like it says, we're going to make our own bubble formula. There's a way you can do that. I'll have a recipe. It's pretty easy to do. And it's just having fun with the kids. We're going to have different blowers. We'll have a bubble sudsy pool for them to play in.
Who doesn't love bubbles?
Exactly right. Yeah. And so that's at 10 o'clock. And again, it'll just be a fun activity there on the porch. Of course, outside to blow our bubbles.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, we ones Monday, July 15th.
All right. Anything else to highlight?
So for those that want to come out in the evening and do some things, so obviously, you know, parks aren't open at night. And so we'd love to have evening programs to highlight some different things. So at the end of the month, it's National Moth Week. And so we're going to have a variety of moth type hikes and programs at various parks. And so again, all of the information's at HancockParks.com. But we're starting off on Sunday, July 21st. This is going to be an adult moth hike out at Erlin Recreation Area at 9:30. So remember, I mean, we got light, getting light later. We're losing daylight. Isn't that weird? First day of summer, and now we're starting to slowly back up. So we want it, you know, darker out, but we'll be setting up some different moth traps to kind of track and looking for moths under the black light and stuff. Okay. And so there's no cost. There's no sign up. So that starts off the week with an adult one. But later in the week, we've got a family one in the evening. We have a daytime moth hike. So you think usually moths are out at night, but we do have some daytime moths.
Okay.
And finishing then that Saturday and with the moth activity. And so, again, if you want to get out and learn some moths, and we've got some adult, active adult, family all ages activities happening, again, various parks. So check that on the website if you want to go out and just be out at night and check out some of the moths and maybe learn a little bit more or not realize. I mean, there's thousands of different types of moths that live. Actually, there's more moths than we have butterflies, which people might not realize.
Interesting.
So if you want to learn a little more about that, check that out.
That's the end of the month.
That's at the end of the month. Yep, that lasts.
All of those activities and everything else is going on in the parks is on the website, as you said, right?
Yes, HancockParks.com.
Okay. We've got a link up for more information at our webpage as well. Michelle Rumschlag from the Hancock Park District talking July programs and activities. Definitely get out to Litzenberg and see all of the upgrades out there. Michelle, thanks very much for dropping by.
Thanks for having me.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. Want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage. Check us out online at goodmornings.net. Coming up tomorrow on the program, the state legislature set to vote this week on Ohio's much-discussed and debated capital budget. Representative John Cross will share his thoughts on the final plan. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.